you'll set. See, I have chassidim set me up, and then they go daven. Chassidic watch, not a litvish watch. We have another half minute. No, we can begin. Today is a fascinating shiur, but before I begin, I have to deal with some current events and some interesting comments. First of all, today is Monday, February 13th, 2017. It's hard for me to say 2017 because the 17 I know is 1917. If I'm not mistaken, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik died in 1917. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was born about a year later. But here we are 100 years later. And very sadly, I want to dedicate today's lecture to a professor of mine, maybe the last living professor I had from Bernard Revel Graduate School, which fortunately or unfortunately has ruined me because no one knows I teach Torah. Everyone I meet, I'm serious. You think I'm joking, Dove? You can ask anyone from America, what does Reb Kefet teach? Oh, he teaches Jewish history. He's a graduate of Bernard Revel. I got involved in scientific Jewish scholarship, but that doesn't take away my knowledge of Shas V'Paiskim. It never was called yet a Kenitol Dami, at least as I saw it, but I lost that. But be it as it may, I want to dedicate the lecture in memory of Professor Arthur Hyman. He was a very special person. An edler mensch. In his field, no one could top him. He was a text man, could teach philosophy, give you an Arabic text, turn it into a Hebrew text, and was one of a kind. And he was beloved. When all was said and done, he taught at YU from 1959 on. 58 or 59, I think it was 59. I was actually in college, but I was already allowed to take some courses in graduate school, my fourth year in Yeshiva College, and I remember his first lecture, and he came in a JPS graduate, someone who had been involved with Wolfson and Harvard, and I remember Rabbi Parnas and others came to hear the lecture. They were like upset, the JPS graduate in Bernard Revel. I remember they heard the lecture, and they saw that they have nothing to worry about, Kanayin Hara. His memory should be a blessing. He had two very happy marriages. He married an almana afterwards, of a mother of Talmidim of mine, whose husband was around when he died. Had a second marriage. His first marriage, his wife herself was quite an accomplished scholar. She was a historian, and she had a niece with the same name who was a firebrand feminist. And there was a very fascinating family. I want to say about the Rav, and this is very, very important. I have to talk very quickly, but people from all over the world sent me copies. This new book came out on the Rav, written by someone who never knew him. And there was a book launch last week in the heart of Jerusalem, and it seems that Rabbi David Cardoza has gotten involved, and he spoke, and he just published a paper. And I want to thank everyone who sent me copies of his paper. I'll make it available after the class. But the understature of his paper is he's very upset with Rabbi Soloveitchik. We put so many hopes in him. He's not the first one to say this. His hero, Rabbi Cardoza's hero, is David Hartman, Davi Hartman. Davi Hartman says the same thing. And I have to tell you, this is plain and simple, sheer apikursis as worst, and at best, they don't understand what halacha is all about. We can't play games with halacha. And everyone says, the Rav did play games with halacha. He says it. Davi Hartman never went to that level. He attacked the Rav blindly. But it's so sad for me to talk about this.
The book.
I haven't read the book, but Talmidim told me they looked at it. They said, Rebbe, I don't want to say till I read it. I'll read it, but I have more important things right now. I'm reading around the clock, learning and reading around the clock. Take my word for it. But Talmidim told me it's not urgently important to read it. He never knew the Rav. He's written the book on the basis of two articles of the Rav. But I want to talk, everyone's attacking the Rav that he permitted women to study Talmud. Why couldn't he permit Hafkat Kedushin, retroactively annul all marriages? You follow? And black and white, Chadolzer attacks him. Why can't he permit a Kohen to marry a Gerusha, to marry a Giyoret? What happens in this world today? What do you mean a Kohen? What's wrong with the Giyoret? A girl converts to Judaism 10 years of age, 12 years of age, 15 years of age. Rakefet writes, quotes the Rav, how he had the question in graduate school of the Jewish boy who was made frum by his classmate, and then they want to marry, she's a Giyoret, and he finds out he's a Kohen. I write word by word what the Rav said. So everyone is criticizing the Rav. So I want to tell you why you're criticizing the Rav. Criticize the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim is the first one who said in modern times, Likutei Halacha, and the Sugya in Masechet Sota, look right into the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim said, we have to start teaching women Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a different world today. So I have to tell you, you have to understand Halacha. The whole question of women not learning Torah, you can go through the Sugya, but to put it very simply, that at that time, women did not study. They got married at the age of 12, 11, 12. A father married her off. She got married when she was a ktana, when she was a nara. There are all types of halakhas that involve who gets the get, who keeps the kesef kedushin. I mean, these are sugyat shleimut. And what the Mishnah was worried about, and Sota Reb Eliezer was worried about, that if you start teaching a woman that if you cheat on your husband and you drink of the bitter waters, you won't drop dead right away if you did good things. Haschut tola. I don't have time now to do the whole sugya, but I'm done him here. You should know it. Haschut tola. No, if that's the first thing you teach a kid, he'll learn to cheat, to be a sneak. I'll do a few mitzvot, and lo aleinu, there are plenty of good Jews like this who rob money, steal money, do every sin under the book, but they daven three times a day, and they do a few mitzvot. Ein hachinami. So that's why, in that context, looking to Rashi, but you see the Rambam already, Paskim's lahalacha, that ma devarim amurim in hilchot haTorah, look in, ma devarim amurim b'Torah Shebaal Peh. Aval Torah Shebichtav, already the Rambam said you have to teach them. Today we're way beyond that period. Today women go to elementary school, women go to high school, women go to postgraduate school. Ribbono Shel Olam, some of you are married to women who have masters, who have doctorates. In my family, in my granddaughters-in-law, one after another, this one is a lawyer, that one is a lawyer, this one has a master's, this one is going for a doctorate. No, in this world, you have, the Rav was absolutely right, if you don't teach them Torah, they really learn Tiflet. The Mishnah says, Ki lulim da Tiflet, referring to, so you attack the Rav that he permitted women to learn Torah, ma inyan shmita reitzel ha-sinai. But now, let's talk a take of Kod Kedushin. My dear students, I don't know too much, believe me, but on the topic of Halachot Kedushin, no one here can tell me anything I don't know. Baruch Hashem. I hope the next volume of Rakafet Aaron. Did you get a Rakafet Aaron, the latest volume? Okay. So I hope the next volume will be on Halachot Kedushin. We're working on it now. Okay. Let me tell you something. If Halachot Kedushin could be a solution, whenever there's a problem, the rabbis have the power, Lafkia Kedusha, retroactively. If that would be true, tell me, what do we need the most difficult topic in the world that a dummy named Rakefet wrote 370 pages on Aguna? When you have an Aguna, you'll sit down, the rabbis will be Mafkia Kedushin retroactively. Rip out Mesechet Yevamah, the last two prakim, rip out in Ebenezer Siman Yud Zayin, the most difficult siman in all of Shulchan Aruch and the longest, rip out, without exaggeration, 1 million plus pages of responsa literature on Aguna. If Havkat Kedushin would be a solution, yes, Chazal had four cases of Havkat Kedushin. In all these cases, there was a get. When there is a get, and there were problems with the get, so the Rabbanim used the vehicle of Havkat Kedushin, lahachshir et haget. That's the pshat in all these Gemaras. Again, I don't have time, but work out the sugyas and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. to come and say wholesale hafkad kedushin, it's not halachic. It is impossible. Forgetting about the moral ethical problem that no marriage will be a marriage. Everyone will know tomorrow the rabbis can say goodbye. Okay. What Rabbi Duvi Hartman, I knew Duvi, he was a Lakewood boy, he was a Bren, I write about him in Washington, he was really something, Duvi, he was a great influence on me. All right, we can't control what happens. Rabbi Kadosh is a product of Haredi Yeshiva. He didn't learn in YU, he didn't learn in Merkaz Harav, he didn't learn in KBY, he learned in Haredi Yeshiva, Mir and elsewhere. And he's a product of that world. According to a Giyaret, again, I plead with you to understand the heart of our battle today is that we live in two worlds. I quoted I heard this from the Rebbe 100 times, I quoted him 1,000 times. Ger v'tosha v'nochi imachem. You're absolutely right. As a Western person, as a toshav, why do we have Kohanim? Why do we have Levium? Everyone is equal. No one is better than the other one. This whole concept of Kohen Levi Yisrael, that he gets the first Aliyah, that he benches, that he last Wednesday had the pigeon of Ben of a great-grandson. It's not the first pigeon of Ben, but I really, this was very unique because I walked Dalet Amot in Eretz Yisrael where I never walked before. Tzahala. No one even knows. I told Mark, Tzahala. He says, where is it? It's the end of Tel Aviv, right before Hod HaSharon, and it's mamish a different area altogether. It's not North Tel Aviv, it's not certainly South Tel Aviv, it's a different area. You think you're in South Africa, all the homes, big fences, one fence after another. Dayan lived there. I should have asked, where did Moshe Dayan live? There's a shrine on the corner. Okay, but we have Kohanim. The whole concept, this is a Torah concept, a ger. A ger, we are gerim, it's not a Western concept. And if we're b'nei Torah, we have to accept Torah. The Western world will see it today, gone tomorrow. But as long as Jews will live, it's going to be Kohen Levi Yisrael. And a Kohen, it's a nisa d'oraita. A Kohen cannot marry a grusha. You're right, you can dray a little. It's not exactly, but it's certainly us. According to most Rishonim, it's nisa d'oraita too. She falls under the category of Zona. Zona doesn't mean a prostitute. Zona means a person who is not born Jewish, has that status as a woman. But all right, I can deal with many things halachically. And it could be if she converted under 3, so there's a tshuva already from the early 20th century under pressure. You saw what the Melamed Lahoil wrote. He spoke about it in the Sunday class. But an Isser, it is absolutely. And to say, Duvi Hartman begins his latest book, or his Talmidim wrote it, where he was rabbi in Montreal, and a Kohen in the Kehillah comes to him, Rebbe, I want to marry a Gerusha. He says, wonderful, will you be Masada Kedushin? Absolutely. And Duvi says, bring me every Kohen he wants to make Gerusha, Giyoret, I will be Masada Kedushin. Personal happiness is more important than the halacha. Well, if that's true, we have no Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit means we surrender. We surrender to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We surrender to God. We surrender to Torah. Naseh v'nishma. The Rav said so many times, why do Chazal stress Ol Malchut Shemayim? Underline the word Ol. Malchut Shemayim. Sometimes it's a yoke. Absolutely, I'm a Western person. What the heck do I have to give a Kohen? You know, the Kohen comes with these coins. My grandson bought it from him for 300 shekel. He made a cheshbon, 278 shekel, that you have it figured out exactly the value. The guy gets 300 shekel profit for redeeming a kid. All right, my Western mind, why can't I redeem it? Who's the Kohen? Who's the bigger London there? Who accomplished more in his life? A little Schnipp Jingle, 25 years old. What did he do in his life? You understand? But I'm a Jew. And Cardoso, I can't believe it. I know where he's going. I know him. He's a great guy. He's a wonderful person to talk to. And I know him quite well. But Ribbono Shel Olam, David Hartman is the tzaddik. And the rub is the Russia. Exactly what's written. So, asicha ve'ekali. Okay, now let's warm up to what the class is really about. First of all, I want to correct a small mistake I made. We spoke about Willy Helmreich. We'll talk about him more in detail. I'm actually going to quote from his book. But Willy Helmreich was not an MTA graduate. I know him, and then I got this correction from Henry Zilberman. I thank him, and the more I think about it, I realize why I made the mistake, because I was friendly with students of mine who were friendly with Willy Helmreich, but he was old, and I thought he had gone to MTA. He's a drop younger than I am. He went to Kamenetz High School in Borough Park, and then he went to Yeshiva College. If I'm not mistaken, he's a 1963, I thought I had written down the year, but if I'm not mistaken, he's a 1967 graduate of Yeshiva College. Correction held. As I've said all along, the world lacks an adequate academic biography. What I was raised with the title critical biography, but today they use a more... sounds nicer, because critical means you're criticizing. It doesn't mean you're criticizing. It means you're going into depth. You're evaluating. You have sources. But an academic biography, remember I told you all along that Art Scroll has biographies about so many gedolim in America. The most important gadol of all, from their point of view, there is no biography. And that is for Baron Cutler. And I told you many times why. Because there are facts about the Baron Cutler that Art Scroll will not publish in the year 2017. I hope it'll change by the year 2018, but this is the reality. So I'm not the only one who says that. I'm always proud when I say something and another scholar echoes it or says it on his own. Yoel Friedman, and I have that Finkelman, I have an article here which I want to give to Morty, because it's your family that learned by the Baron. Yoel Finkelman of Beit Shemesh does an article, An Ideology for American Yeshiva Students, The Sermons of Rabbi Aaron Cutler, 1942 to 1962. He deals with Rabbi Aaron. It's an interesting article. I knew Rabbi Aaron intimately, so I have a lot to say about the article, but it's a very fascinating article. In the very first footnote, there is no adequate biography of Rabbi Cutler. So Baruch Hashem, I'm not alone.
Are there any biographical works?
One by a guy from Lakewood, Dershowitz, Yitzchak Dershowitz, and one that I cited to you in class a few years ago from Sersky. They are not academic biographies.
But it's not published by Art Scroll, though.
Yitzchak Dershowitz's volume is not on that level that Art Scroll could publish it. In other words, it's a Lakewood boy praising his Rebbe. It's very valuable. It has information. For me, it has pictures. It brings back memories.
Is there anything that's inaccurate in it?
Of course there's inaccurate. It talks, I told you in class, it talks about Malka Cutler, that Lo Aleinu, she became not like her brother, she became like Aaron Rakefet, a religious Zionist. If you know the truth, halavai, she should be a religious Zionist. You understand? Okay, I spoke about it in class.
Alex, really cover relax. These things over?
Alex,
everybody knows that.
Alex,
not from
where did you wake up today? You don't know the Haredi world. They can tell you day is night and night is day, and expect
people
you to
admit
believe
in the
it.
World
it's
is
it's not why you. It's not why you, and it's not Chabad. Got it? Okay. Now, of course, it's in print. Yitzchak, I told you in class, I showed it to you. Alex, you got your head chopped off. Last week, you mentioned in class something about the Moroccans came and what they did to them here. So my dear student, Sri Lika, wanted, he quotes a whole article here, you'll take it after class. He quotes Rav Aviner. Thank God the Moroccans came to Israel.
I don't think I mentioned the Moroccans.
Well, it was understood. The
Aliyah.
The Sfardim, no Moroccans came on him. Thank God they came to Israel, because Rabbi Aviner says, now so many years later, look what happened to the Moroccans who went to France. You know the rate of intermarriage today? It's either Balei Tshuva, which are not the majority. The rate of intermarriage is something like 50-60%. Those that came here...
The Rebbe wanted them to stay.
Those that came here, we know what happened. Baruch Hashem, Shas is very powerful today on the Balei Tshuva of their children. Okay, now to Reb Yitzchak Kuttner. Very, very fascinating. My dear student, I.A. Liebman, whatever I.A. tells you is absolute fact. Maybe I had a little influence on him over the last, he's listening, is it 25 years, 30 years that you've been my virtual student? But he tells the following story. Mr. William Zeev Baumgarten lived across the street from the yeshiva. He was a very big Machnes Orech, and we'd have the Rosh Yeshiva over for breakfast many times. When Rabbi Huttner became a Rosh Yeshiva, he invited him over. Mr. Baumgarten called in his wife and tells her, I want you to meet the new Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Huttner. When his wife comes in and takes one look at him, she puts her hands on her face where a beard should be and exclaimed incredulously, a Rosh Yeshiva on a bod? A Rosh Yeshiva without a beard? Rabbi Huttner said, paraphrasing the Gemara, Mi olam lo nitzchani adam chutz me isha zu. That never did anyone get the best of me except for this woman. The coming weeks, he started growing a beard. Rabbi Ari Schwartz, who published that wonderful book, a magnificent book, on, remember I told you about it last week or 2 weeks ago, Degel Yisrael, on the blue and white Degel, what its status is halachically. And he tells me, Rabbi Eliezer Waldman, the head of Kiryat Arba, this Rabbi Eliezer Waldman, he was a Chavei Knesset, he's exactly my age, we're in the same shavit in Bnei Akiva, he was a Torah Vadas boy, he knew what's going on in Torah Das, Chaim Berlin, and he said, Rav Huttner told him privately, quote, Rav Kook was 20 times as great as those who opposed him. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria heard from Rav Huttner, if I would not have met Rav Kook, I would be lacking 50% of myself. And in the email, he gives me the sources for these quotes. Now, on to last week. So it's absolutely true. When you do your doctorate on Rav Yitzchak Kutner, when you deal with the Maharal, wherever he mentions that esoteric source with such cover, it's Rav Avram Yitzchak Kohen Kook. Now, with last week, and I have unbelievable how information comes in. If you recall, we were finishing out Rav Huttner, the article. By the way, you're in the middle of, we've devoted months now to Rav Yitzchak Huttner of Chaim Berlin, dealing with the history of Torah in the United States. And as much as we are YU people, we have to be intellectually honest. So I've done my best, like I did with the Rebbe, which only took 2.5 years, to be intellectually honest and understand the Rebbe as he was. Rav Huttner, we spoke last week, we quoted Hillel Goldberg, that the last 10 years of his life were very difficult. He was hijacked in 1970, and he desperately wanted to come back to Israel permanently. Rakefit's own theory, which I stated last week, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong, he might have understood the hijacking as Minas Shemayim, what are you doing in Chutz Laretz? You belong in Israel. So those 10 years recovering from the hijacking, Chaim Berlin, growing older, and growing older is not pleasant, and I can clue you in why. I quote the Rav saying it when I was a kid. I quote the Rav word by word in the Rav. And I didn't understand when I was a kid, where the Rav speaks about it's hard for youngsters to relate to someone who is older. Someone older relates to a world that is not real, that is not tangible. And unfortunately, that's the way life is. Here I am, not a youngster, and Baruch Hashem alive, kicking, screaming, yelling. By the way, no classes next week, going to a lot with my wife, Be'ezrat Hashem. And if you ask me, how can you cut classes to go to Eilat? I explained yesterday. You know, anyone who was here yesterday heard the explanation loud and clear. It's the Rav Hirsch Shita. Rav Hirsch was at the, was at the train station in Frankfurt. He's going to the Alps in Switzerland. So wise guys say, Rebbe, how can you leave the Rabbinah to waste time looking at the Alps? And he tells them, at my age, I want to be prepared to answer the Ribbon Shelolem when he says, Shamshon, did you see the beauty of my creation? Did you see the Alps? So that's one simple reason my wife has never been to Eilat, and I was there last one time in 1970 with BMT when we slept on the beach. The real reason is Shalom Bayit, V'day L'Chakima. Let me not overstate the case. So here I am alive kicking, but the world is shifting away. Everyone I know, Professor Hyman, Rabbi Yosef Weiss, my last Rebbe, my last professor, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, my last idol. Okay, Lahavdil. I mean, I Joe DiMaggio. I don't want to underplay what no, that era was.
He was a stump character.
I know. I said he was a student of Wolfson. Not only JTS. After this, he was at Harvard. He was Wolfson. Wolfson considered him one of his top students. And Hyman and Wolfson arranged with the Rav for Hyman to start teaching in Bernard Rebel Graduate School. Absolutely. So it was a difficult era. Now, here's what really happened, and I thank a number of people wrote to me, but Chaim Schnitz actually sent me documents, and once again, I stand in awe of the computer, what you can find in it. Hillel Gorbach has an esoteric sentence that he says that the last years of his life, also a lot of aggravation in the state of Israel, he hints at legal difficulties. And I mentioned last week in class when we ended off, I said, I know about the American difficulties, which I'll deal with down the line, not yet. That's a very, very interesting story, and I have tremendous insight. There'll be one sentence I state that if you understand it, it opens your eyes, not only on this issue, but on some of the halakhic issues we spoke about Sunday. Yitzchak, remember that when I discuss rough witness problems in America at the end. But I didn't know about Israel. And I remember I said, if any of the virtual students listening can tell me what these difficulties were, does he mean the New York problem or the Israeli problem? New York, I know. There's nothing you can tell me that I've already gone through the computer, have the documents. I know. But Israel, I don't know. Even though I'm living here at the time, I was already an old-timer here. Sure enough, I got the emails and with the documents, and the story is very simple and sad and fascinating. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuklin decided that building a Torah institution in Brooklyn is not enough. If you don't build in Israel, it doesn't last. It's not the future. Who else made that decision? Mr. Joe Gruss. That's the whole reason we're sitting here. Because Joseph Gruss, if you've studied Rakefet's work, Washington, which is a light reading but with deep material behind it, Mr. Gruss told the Rav, you're the greatest Rebbe we have alive. Teaching in New York is not enough. You have to teach in the greatest Rebbe and the greatest home of the Jewish people, and I will build you a place to teach in Jerusalem. The problem was the Rav, you know, didn't believe him. Figured, till he'll build it, Mashiach will be here. He didn't know that Joe Gruss says something. Joe Gruss takes out $1 billion and does what he has to do. So that was Gruss's idea. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuklin had the same idea. Then he decides he wants to open up in Israel. He wants to spend time here. He needs a location. This is the late 70s. So he picks a location, an area just building up at the time, North Jerusalem, off Rehov Bar Ilan. Give you a feeling what we're talking about. Why did he want that area? Because he wanted to be in the heart of Jerusalem. And that was the heart. It's the frum area. He's going to have students. He has people to talk to and to talk with. And they pick a plot of land.
And it's for Israelis or Americans or both?
No, he wanted Israelis. He wanted to have an impact right here on the Israeli scene. Now, there would have been Americans too. And you have Torah, you have Americans. Mir, Slabodka, Chevron, Panovich, you understand? It was not planned as a BMT. It was planned to be an institution that would have influence on the Israeli scene. Okay? There was a big balabas in Chaim Berlin, Avraham Fruchthandler. If anyone will correct me, I'll be happy. I remember an Avi Fruchthandler, Chaim Berlin boy from Bnei Akiva. I remember him very well. Not overly tall. Do you remember Fruchthandler? And Fruchty, and a real activist. That Fruchthandler, I became very wealthy. And he became very close to the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the Talmud of the Rosh Yeshiva. Do you know who I'm talking about? Is it the same fellow from Benden? I know that you don't know. You don't have the connection, but it seems to me it probably is. Fruchthandler funded the Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, and they bought this piece of property. Evidently, unknown to them, there was a Hasidus that was first catching on and growing big. You've heard the story from me over the decades, many, many times, the Belzer Rebbe, the present Belzer Rebbe. It's an unbelievable story. Belz was wiped out when Rebarilla died, his uncle, his wife and 11 children were killed by Hitler. No one survived. The only survivor the one who was the closest to the Rebarilla Belz, Rokach, Rokeach in English, Rokach in Hebrew, was his younger brother, Reb Mordechai de Dugura Rav. And he was quite a few years younger. When Reb Arela died, the Bilguga Rav, who lost his entire family, had remarried. And he had two more children, a girl in 47 and a boy in 48. And that boy, Yisachar Dov, named after Reb Arela's father, or named after his great-grandfather, that boy, Reb Yisachar Dov, he became the Belzer Rebbe. Now, he became Belzer Rebbe, as I spoke about yesterday, in a different context. He was 18 years of age when he married the Vishnitzer Rebbe's daughter. And as I said yesterday, as a Litvak, an 18-year-old kid, I would never bow or be less kenner. What does he know? I had a Litvak like myself has a Rebbe once. My life centers around the Rav. To me, he is sitting right in this chair. He's a living reality. I will never do anything that would embarrass the Rebbe, in my humble opinion. Okay, that's the reality. But I can't look at these young kids that come along. But a chassid, chassidim, stood in front of this 18-year-old kid, chassidim 80 years of age, who never did a sin in their lives, some who knew shasim paiskim, avot batei dinim. They lifted up a kais l'chaim and waited for this 18-year-old kid to say l'chaim, and then they said l'chaim to the Rebbe and drank the kos. All right, bells began. People were cynical. People said, no, what'll be? Bells began. How many bells have survived? Who's interested? A Yingle, 18 years old. Well, this 18-year-old has built bells into the second biggest Hasidus in the state of Israel today. I need not tell you it's second only to Gur, second to Ger. And the Rebbe, by the late 70s, is no longer a kid. It's not 1966 when he got married. He's building, and he, if you know Belz Chassidus, my wife stammed from Belz. My wife has big yichus in Belz. Her great-great-grandfather was the Baal Tfila for the first Belz Rebbe. He was the Shlich Tzibah for the Sa Shalom, for Reb Shalom Rokach. His wife's name was Malka. My wife's name is Malka. So draw your own conclusions. So he wants to build. And their dream is to build big, beautiful shuls. In other words, the Lubavitcher Rebbe's dream was outreach all over the world in every nook and corner. Belz had a dream of shul, a briyot, there's a Beit Mikdash Ba'at that has to be big and beautiful. And the Belzer Rebbe started buying up land in North Jerusalem. And they start buying up land, and they have totally surrounded this little plot that was owned by Chaim Berlin. By hook or crook, they got them out. Now, I don't know details, because Miman of Shach, if Chaim Berlin bought it, how can you force them out without paying them? According to the websites, Fruchthandler lost a fortune of money. They said, as wealthy as he was at the time already, he lost real money. You know, what does it mean? If I lose $100, all right, it's $100. A wealthy guy, $100. I light my cigarette on $100 bill. You take Leib Levaya, if you go into the highest element, the Reichman brothers, when they were doing well. What's to lose $100,000 is a galechta. You understand? So the websites are saying he lost real money. No one has the exact details. The bitterness, again, I will not quote, because I've told you time and again, I have never seen pornography. I was taught the computer, I was over 70, in this room with Talmud, David Katz, who today is one of the big shots helping Satma. I don't know how he does it. He lives in West Hempstead, a modern, but sometimes Satma needs a nice YU presence. You follow, clean shaven. David said, Reb, you know how to use a computer? It's a disgrace. I said, you know what? My mother learned she was over 70. Teach me. I'm over 70. He taught me, Baruch Hashem. I get to the Yankee website, no problem. Yomo will testify. I looked at it even this morning. Yomo, I kicked out, you know, to Shvat Ami. Has to go to Shvat Ami, Baruch Hashem. So if you would see what the bloggers have to say, the hatred against Rav Hutna, the hatred against the Belzer. But they quote, I don't want to quote it all, that some of the big people who continued Chaim Berlin said every Belzer's a goner, no good. Belzer's wrote back, how dare you speak about the Belzer Rebbe that way? He is Mashiach Tzidkenu. I couldn't believe my eyes. But I tell you, I never saw pornography, I never saw murders, everything they say the computer's no good about. But I did see so much Lashon Hara Rechilat Zilzul B'Chvot Chachamim. They should arrest all bloggers. Give the news. Don't curse. And everyone curses. The more they curse,
the rule is not to look at any of the comments
that's what I say. That's what I'm saying.
Just ignore it.
Knock out the bloggers. But I throw open the question now. So and Rabbi Hutman had already approved the purchase. He had looked at the site. He was very happy. Then b'di'evid, Rav Hutner already, it's the last year of his life, the year afterwards, b'di'avad, when Belz conquered them and took that whole area where you know what they've built, it's a really, we all call it the miniature Beit Mikdash, then the city told them, go out to Hanof. They were just planning Hanof. They viewed Hanof like you're living in Lawrence. It's outside of the big city, the five towns. You need the LIRR. This is, you can't get in on a subway or a bus. You understand? It's psychological. Oh, Hanof, it was a b'di'evid, b'di'evid. But that's where they built the Pachat Yitzchak Beit Medesh, which is headed up by the Rosh Yeshiva's son-in-law, Rav Yonason David. It exists until today. For whatever the reasons, it never conquered the world. But it is a Mossad, but it's not like Chaim Berlin in New York, which remains a major institution.
Here, do you have any students there?
No, I don't know, but my estimated guess would be not more than 50, 60. I've opened up, I've gone into Beit, I've looked, I've been, because I have a daughter living in Hanof. My daughter was the third or fourth family into Hanof. Hanof was originally planned as a mixed neighborhood, though. A mixed neighborhood. People don't realize this. And there was one Kablan, a real old Yerushalmi, a real macha, and he built and said he would only sell to frum people. And when he built and only frum people, then more frum people came. And the wind-up was the original settlers who were half and half. The Chiloniyim had to get out. Because you couldn't drive on Shabbos. Too many. It's not that they didn't have to put up fences. People looked at you driving. It was a very uncomfortable feeling. It's like Ruth Cheshen. Remember I told you when she turned 90, Cheshen, Talmidei Hagra, Mrs. Cheshen, the Keren Yerushalayim. When she turned 90, they interview her and they say, what is it like living in Rehavia all your life? And she says, so this foolish lady, even in her 90s, she says, I never thought the day would come when my neighbors would look down upon me in Rehavia for driving on Shabbos. You follow? Rehavia was established to get away from the Gula crowd, the Meir Sharim crowd, the Yishuv HaYashan, and she feels uncomfortable in Rehavia. in Hanof, Alacha Kama Vakama, where slowly but surely it became 90% firm, 95, and the neighbor today, of course, as you know, is 100%. So that's where Pachat Yitzchak
went
up.
Where did they draw their students from? Do you know what the demographic is in terms of that?
No, I would imagine...
And my understanding from people I know that have learned there, or my sense, I don't know if this is correct, is that they probably, guys who are more drawn to Makshava and things like that.
No, there's no question.
So maybe it's because it's more of a small niche, but my
experience has been that it's all Israelis. In other words, the...
Well, I know Americans that are learning there, but maybe it's mostly
Israeli, and I know that the language is Hebrew. It's not...
Although I was told that the Rosh Yeshiva gives shir in Ivris, not in Ivrit.
In Ivris. All right, so that limits
like
it to... That limits it too in the modern times. Okay, but that's the story that Hillel Gorberg was referring to. The American story I want to leave for the very end because it has very powerful implications on what happened in America, what's happening in Israel today, but we'll leave that for the end. Okay, so Yasher Koyach to the people who informed me, and the virtual students are very valuable, Machkimim et Rabam. Now, I want to come back to a description of Slabodka, where the Rosh Yeshiva grew up. And once again, I return to the beautiful volume by Rivka Blau, Learn Torah, Love Torah, Live Torah, Harav Mordechai Pinchas Teitz, the quintessential rabbi. Rivka Blau, his daughter, married to my chavrusa, Jerry Blau, known to you as Rav Yosef Blau, and she gives a beautiful description of Slabodka. And we ended off last week, if you recall, it was magnificent, where she describes her father, Rabbi Teitz, my mentor in the rabbinate. My mentor in the rabbinate, you have to understand what Rav Teitz means to me. And a very interesting figure. We'll talk about him when we get into the history of the rabbinate in the United States, but that's not yet. But a very fascinating figure. So Rav Teitz says to Jerry Blau, pardon me, I know I should use titles, Harav, Mashkiach, Yeshiva, but when I tell a story, I'm reliving it, and I'm reliving my relationship, and to me, he's Jerry, Arnie, Jerry. Don't think when you're in the state of Kohelet that you should forget about Shir HaShirim. Let's put it that way. So she says to Rabbi Teitz says, Nu Yosef, probably called him Yosef, tell me about Rav Huttner's talk. And Jerry Blau tells his father-in-law how Rav Huttner, and he describes how he comes in, and it's dramatic, and he whispers it first, and Rav Teitz cuts him off and says, exactly like the Alter of Slabodka. So you see, the Alter's influence on him was not just in Machshava, not just in outlook, not just in Musa, not just philosophy, but even how you give a shir. And you can see what Slabodka did. Now there's another beautiful story here about Rav Teitz, but you can translate it to Rav Huttner as a Rosh Yeshiva, what the atmosphere was like in Slabodka. And she describes that, a yeshiva boy at times is a kanoi, more kanoi even than his rebbeim. And there was an incident in Slabodka where one of the top students started to question, who am I? What am I? And he even smoked on Shabbat. All right? No. Don't be so surprised. What's the famous story that has been immortalized in print? My old chavah, whom I grew up with, I'm talking, Alex, don't cut me off, I'm talking about Rabbi Riskin as I knew him in the 50s, okay? Alex, I want to tell everyone, Alex has granted permission to the Rebbe to talk about Rabbi Steve Riskin when he was known as Stevie the Wonder, okay? So it's a famous story. That in Rotten, a student had doubts, and he smoked on Shabbat. And Nu, you know the story? Let me continue. It's been written up. It's absolutely true. They smoked on Shabbat. And They wanted to throw him out, but the Chavetz Chaim wouldn't let. He said, "No, mitonish them a reislafen, chlumit them reden. I want to talk to him." They brought him to the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim put his hands on his hands and started crying. And the Chavetz Chaim's tears fell on his hands. He never was Mechalel Shabbos again, went on to become a Rav. And Riskin, Steve, was speaking in Florida. And he tells the story, it's about 40 years ago, I would say, 50 years ago, 50 years ago. Tells the story, and a Jew pops up, an older gentleman, and he says, "Ich bin der Yid," that the Chavetz Chaim cried. And you see, you gotta know. And I had two similar stories. One, where I don't know the end results, that's not very sad. I told this to a class in YU in 1962-63. And I told the story that it's not enough that you learn halacha. A person has to have a feeling, has to have a commitment, and you have to have emotion. It's not just dry, cold learning. Torah is not biology. Torah is not chemistry. Torah is not mathematics. And I said, in Kamenetz, the brightest guy in the yeshiva, Rabbi Baruch Be'er, would give his shiur once during the week and once on Friday night. And somehow they walked into this guy's room unannounced, and he was writing up the shiur he just heard on Friday night. I said, Torah is like biology. I tell the class. Kids walk out. The next day, a kid brings his father. True story. Brings his father. Father, a Yudapayasha, Rabbi Fuchs, had a shul in the Bronx. May have been a Shanghai survivor. And he comes to class with his son, comes over and kisses me and hugs me. He says, "Wie kennst du den Meister? How do you know the story? It's like an Americana Jugendlicher, you're an American youngster to me." I was 23, 24 at the time, 24, 25 at the most. "How do you know that story?" He says, "I was in the yeshiva." Absolutely true. Okay, they threw him out. I don't know what happened. Maybe he didn't even survive Lower Langer, World War II. But how do you deal with a story like that? Another story that happened to me, exactly Riskin's story. Exactly. I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was what I call a moment of Gilui Eliyahu. Detroit, I'm speaking, 1977, sent by the State of Israel. I just became a full-fledged Israeli. I finished basic training. I have an Israeli mispari shi. I'm in the army. Could you imagine? Sent to talk about Israel, about Aliyah. I write to Rebbe. I embrace Rebbe. I mean, first time I see him again since 69. I speak at the RCA convention. And among the other places, I'm speaking in a young Israel in a suburb of Detroit. And I'm speaking about Israel and the Israeli army. I've told you the story over the decades, maybe not in this year, this class. But what am I saying? I'm saying, look, Lamazachinu. Look at the Israeli army. Look what we've accomplished. And I explain what the army and how it works and how it's an ingathering of exiles and what we do for Kashrut and Shabbat. And I end off my talk with the famous story of the Magid Meisharim. In Europe, you know, there were Magidim. Rabbis didn't speak. They spoke twice a year, gave a pilpul, Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos Tshuva. But Magidim made a living going from city to city. And one Magid arrives in Grodno, and he's giving a talk, and Alachzich Ois, Reb Shimon Shkap is there. The whole yeshiva is there. And the Magid, the Tanema cook of these Nanashit Zionim, look at these foolish Zionists. They want to fight the Arabs. They want to build an army. Look, will the Machna HaKrazal will announce every Jewish male between the age of 25 to 50 report to the town square. We're forming an army to fight for Israel. 100,000 Jews coming from 25 to 50. Fine. what is it, 20? When do you start working the Beis HaMikdash? Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it 20? Am I right?
I think so.
20. 20 to 50. So, and then, no, it's a Yiddish Stoldat, it's a Jewish, a Yiddish Armee, it's a Jewish army. So then you have to have a Kohen Mashuach Muhammad. You all know the Sugis and Saita, Kohen Hilchat Rav, Melachim, the Rambam, Koich Mashuach, and the Koich begins. Who is the individual here that got engaged, got married? Can't put the yellow baton. Got to chase him out of the army. All right, a question. I don't want to go into a pupil. I know this together. Shut, Muhammad. But you throw him out of the army. Who planted a vineyard and didn't yet harvest the fruit? Couldn't eat it yet. 4 years, fourth year. Out of the army. Mi bana bayit, out of the army. Now you're left with 50,000 instead of 100,000. Ah, mi hayish hayarei v'rach levav. Who never sinned, and chazal tajav. But what does it mean, a sin? He didn't speak between baruch hu t'yotza'ar. He didn't speak between tefillin shalyat and tefillin shalrosh. 46,996 people leave. All you're left with is the Chafetz Chaim, the Gerer Rebbe, the Belzer Rebbe, and Rav Chaim Isaac Brzezinski. And with these great Gedolim, old men who never did anything but learn Torah, we're going to fight the Arabs? And everyone is laughing. And take a look what we have today, Tzva Haganah Yisrael. Do you know when I finished the lecture, they wheel up a man 102 years old in a wheelchair, and he jumps out of the wheelchair and falls on me, hysterically crying. He says, "Ich hab gewen bei der Bay, ihr seid gerichtet, afilu Reb Shimon hat gelacht." He says, "I was there, I was studying in Grodna. You are absolutely right. Even Reb Shimon Shkub was hysterical." Okay. In honor of our guest, I'll add one postscript. The same Magid Meshurim got to Brisk and told the same joke, and everyone was hysterical except Reb Chaim Briska. Was lacht man? Mitzei, vel mimachin milchama. Why are we laughing? With these gedolim, we will make milchama. What are we laughing? All right, so back here, unbelievable what happens in life. So Mamish, I consider that Gilui Aliyahu, that man, he was there. He was there. I was there now. I was there in Grodno. So what happened in Slabodka? Watch. Very fascinating story. And it has to be accurate. You can't make a story like this up. So he smoked on Shabbos. The next thing the young Rabbi Teitz hears, that two younger students from his hometown, Liebenhof, they're sorting out the students now for Dacha. What does Dacha mean? The yeshiva used to send all the boys between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Chodesh Elul to like summer camp. So they're sending these kids, two kids, to summer camp, and their madrich is to be this boy that smoked on Shabbos. Rabbi Teitz finds out, he felt responsible for these boys from his father's town. He decided to tell them that if the chaperone's behavior proves surprising, they should not imitate it. They should trust their own good judgment. The next day, the mashkiach, Rav Avraham Grzezinski, at this point already the Alto was in Israel and he died there, but Rav Avraham Grzezinski, who was killed by Hitler, lo aleinu, he calls in the young Pinchas Teitz and he says to him, "Isn't there a hanalah here, an administration?" Pinchas answers, "Yes." then why are you working on a matter that the Havalar is already dealing with? We are aware that the student has doubts. We are aware that he smoked on Shabbos. But we know he has a powerful mind and a charismatic personality. If we let him use his gifts for Torah, he may become a great leader. We want him to be with these boys. Maybe the responsibility will help him find himself. Don't mix in. And Rav Pinchas Teitz tells the story afterwards. This person who smoked on Shabbos became a very well-known Talmud Chacham and spiritual leader. And Rav Teitz said, from this little story, I learned two things. First, contrary to students' assumptions, sometimes the administration does know what's happening. And you follow most kids, they walk around, says, they knew what was happening, but they had a plan, and they were much smarter than I was as a student. Rav Teitz is now being quoted, a school can be like a microwave oven, shaking up the atoms for a beneficial effect. And very fascinating. You learn how to be a machanech. The greatness of a Rebbe, to take in kids who are ga'anim, tzaddikim, and teach them, that's no kunz. The kunz is to reach out to the average student and turn him into a first-rate Talmud Chacham and Yirei Shamayim. And by the way, the Rebbe actually said this. I quote the Rebbe word by word. Remember when Rebbe Aaron Cutler died and we gathered around him and asked him to say a few words about Rebbe Aaron Cutler, and he said, what sticks in my mind, one of the amazing thoughts, Rebbe Aaron and I on one hand were very similar. We were Litvakin, we were Briska, everything was the Gemara, Gefet, Gemara, Perish means Perish Rashi, Tosfat, Gefet. But Rav Aaron could only teach the Mitzuyanim. His share, Rav Aaron was famous, and I'm an eyewitness and an ear witness to this. Most Talmidim in Lakewood did not follow Rav Aaron. Some lost him at the end of 10 minutes, some at the end of 15 minutes. Only the giants, the Arisha B'chabura, were only with Reb Chaim at the end of an hour and a half, when the shiur ended. The Rav said, I attempt to make my shiurim comprehensible to the average student. I want to reach out. It's very accurate. And a Rebbe has to know how to deal with students. Some students are great, you can demand. Other students you have to encourage. Other students you have to give self-confidence. That was the altar of Slabodka, that's Rav Hutner, and yours truly, I can tell you, I have students from the 60s who remain my closest confidants and friends, supporters, cheerleaders until today. Why? Very simple. The students I teach today, you're older than I am. You would like to change me. Alex has tried time and again to get my admiration for Chabad into a positive outcome. Right or wrong?
What are you talking about?
Alex, relax.
I'm trying to convince you to be a Chabad? When did I ever
Alex,
do that?
When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Don't confuse me with the facts. Natan would love the Rebbe. Look at these dear students. It's a different world. Oh, but when you have a kid, a teenager, and you're the Rebbe, you change these students' lives. And I have one example. An example is it's on a movie. It actually shows up that I don't want to mention his name. Rabbi Doctor. I have another Rabbi Doctor. And read my lips. This kid, a lot of trouble in his house. His mother was very sick. The father had to spend his time taking care of the mother. She lived a number of more years, but not much longer. This kid went through a very difficult time. The Lichtensteins knew the family well. His older sister got married at 18. Toby said to me, she got married to run away from the house. And this kid was accepted on probation. And I saw this kid, brilliant kid, good mind, a good heart, but difficulty at home, no self-confidence yet. And at the end of the year, I'm going in Aliyah, they're making a big farewell party and taking primitive movies, circa 1969. And I'm saying to the kid, I'm embracing him and saying, you will be a great Talmud Chacham. You have that ability. And that's exactly where that young man is today. Rav, PhD in his field, successful, and an old man already. I'm talking 69. Figure out how old he is. And his chaver, just, they recorded a movie about MTA. So they interviewed me, in Queens. I spoke about MTA in my time, the 50s. And they interviewed, I heard afterwards, this a Talmud of mine at a separate time. Also a rabbi with a PhD in his field, very successful. And he spoke about MTA in his time. And what did he speak about? That I could go to MTA and have a Rebbe like Rabbi Rothkopf. He said, you know him today as a Rabbi Kefet. He then was right. So you see the influence. This is Slabodka. This is where Rav Chutna studied. And here, another story is told here. Slabodka was very open. I alluded to this last week. It could be it's a result of World War I. Everyone realized if you had any seichel, all these ideologies were going nowhere except killing millions and millions of people. Freedom, anarchism, communism, Bolshevikism, the Bundes, the revolution was a tragedy. So he didn't have the problem he had in Volozhin in the 1870s, the 1880s, where the world was glistening and inviting. What a wonderful world! We'll overthrow the Tsar, we'll have democracy, everyone will be equal. Oh, fabulous socialism, everyone will share. Oh, beautiful. So by this time already, in Slabodka, part, I told you this last week, part of the whole environment, not only do you dress properly and a tie and a jacket, but you read the newspapers, you have to know what's happening, you have to be up to date, Dama Shatashiv, you have to be intelligent, you have to know how to answer. Slabodka, wow. Now there's one individual in the pre-World War II world, it's a name that most of you never heard of, it is so sad what Hitler did to us. He survived, but only a few years. He was the greatest Eloi in the yeshiva world. What Reb Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg was in 1900, Reb Mordechai Progomansky was in 1930. Now, Reb Mordechai Progomansky, a very fascinating individual. Biography has been written about him in Israel. I read it from cover to cover. I couldn't put it down. I yet know people who yet knew Reb Mordechai Progomansky, although every day that goes by, they're few and less. Reb Mordechai Progomansky came from a very enlightened home, religious, but like wanted a YU education for him. He was very knowledgeable in science, mathematics, had a Gleinische cup, a head like the Rav, a head like the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he goes to high school, graduates high school, and afterwards wanders into Telz and is just caught up in learning. And within a few years, he knows Kol HaTorah Kula. His name was illuminated in stars throughout the Litvische Welt. Whenever he walked into a yeshiva, he would go to Mir, go to Slabodka, wherever Telz was his home, but he wanted to take in all over. Wherever he walked into the yeshiva, a tremendous storm broke out. Everyone ran about him and students started asking questions and everyone knew who he was. He survives the Holocaust with miracles, had never married, winds up in France, finally marries, and within the year of his marriage, he dies. It's so sad, a very, very sad story. And what an individual. So, right there in Slobodka, Rabbi Kites, Rabbi Pinchas, becomes close to him. And at that moment, the late 20s, early 30s, Reb Mordechai's sister is raising questions. She had become a communist. This is exactly like Reb Aaron Cutler and his sister Malka, except 25 years afterwards. The same story. And Reb Mordechai Progomansky says to his sister, "You know what? Let's sit down together, raise your questions, and I will try to answer them." And Rav Pinchas Teitz and a number of other students are invited, she didn't mind, to hear this debate between Rav Mordechai Progomansky and his sister. And the debate was fast and furious, but after a few sessions, the sister raised her hands and came back to Kol HaTorah Kula, B'Lev V'Nefesh. And this too had an influence on Rav Pinchas Teitz, that ability to outreach, to influence, to understand the generation. You can understand that this was Rav Yitzchak Kuttner as well, and this was the secret of Slobodka, the secret of the Alta. And here I'll tell you a little story about the Rav. I can't mention the name because the person who told it to me, I'm an aid me p'aid, very reliable witness, but doesn't want his name mentioned. Perhaps you'll understand why. You'll hear it's a fabulous story. I just pulled this on a lady the other day. I was coming out of an elevator, and you'll understand, I pulled the same shtick on her, and she, if she had $1 million, she would have handed over to me b'kavadu b'haratzah. And the story is as follows. A very brilliant person, YU graduate, Talmud of the Rav, on the faculty, had a sister who was just as brilliant. She was in Barnard. But Shabbos morning, father came home from shul, made kiddush, sat down with his son or sons, and they learned. No women allowed. Women don't have to learn Gemara. Don't have to know so much. And this girl, as she grew older, you know, we're living with the shadow of feminism. The story evidently happened in the 70s. This woman started to resent her father. You resent your father, you resent God. Resent God, you resent religion. And there was a family simcha. And she calls her brother. She says, "Look, I'll come from Barnard. I'll meet you at Yeshiva U. And you'll drive, you're driving to the simcha. I'll go with you." Brother said, "Fine." She comes to the yeshiva. She's now in the first hall, where the yeshiva had moved to and after I was gone already. And right, first hall is the building where the classes were, right? Off Amsterdam, on the side street. And she's sitting on the bench waiting for her brother. And lo and behold, 2 minutes later, the Rav and her brother come out of the elevator. They just finished Shayura. And she pops up and runs over, and her brother introduces her. This is my Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik, my sister, the name, whatever. Fine. And they come to the door, to the building. And both the brother and sister stand back, open the door. "Rebbe, please." And the Rav says, "No, no, ladies first," and insist that she walk out first. At that moment, all her doubts, all her questions, all her anger dissipated, never to return again. It's a true story. That's chinuch. I pulled that on a lady. I don't know who the lady was, but she seemed to know me, you know, because I've spoken in public so many times, so she seemed to know me. We were coming out of, it was an office, a dentist. A lot of my students are there. My family has offices there. and we were coming out of the elevator together, and she's signaling for me to go first. I say, no, no, ladies first. Wow. Okay, that's Slobodka. The story here continues. I'll just stay on it for one more minute. By the mid-20s, Rabbi Teitz wants to go to Israel. Hebron has taken off. The Slobodka branch is world famous. Rav Moshe Mordechai is in Hebron. The Alter is in Hebron. Over 100 students are in Hebron. Zionism is in the air, even if you don't refer to it as formal Zionism. Eretz Yisrael, it's long before BMT. He wants to go. And Rivka writes, his father absolutely forbade him. Why? A few years earlier, his older sister, Yona, and her husband, Shlomo Beckerman, had settled in Haifa. Dov Yosef and his wife, Ruchama, had settled in Chadera. Rabbi Teitz Sr. did not want to send a third child. He wanted one child to remain in Europe. It might have saved Rav Pinchas Teitz's life. In other words, he was not in Hebron during the 1929 massacres. So, magnificent description. It goes on and on. You feel the atmosphere, the air of Slobodka in this book. You feel the insight, the wisdom of Reb Nutan Zvi Finkel, the author of Slobodka. Beautiful description. And you start to understand where Rav Teitz came from, but for us in particular, where Reb Yitzchak Chutna came from. What did we say all along? His love for Eretz Yisrael was very deep. And this is something, having been a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael now for 48 years, it's amazing. I always say this about the people I sent to Russia. People would come back, you know, within a month or so, so back to normal life, totally forgot where they were and what they went through in Moscow and Leningrad, the other cities. Eretz Yisrael, others would come back from Russia, their whole lives would be changed. I've spoken about it many times. Yitzchak Rubin's wife, Zichrona Livracha, Judy, her whole life changed. You can't imagine that. Her home, the furniture, the used clothes, the used furniture, what went on, 7 in the morning till 12 midnight. Couldn't do enough. And people come to Eretz Yisrael for a year, BMT. Nope. Some of the kids we taught in 69, from 69 on, taught in BMT for 20 years, their entire lives change. They have grandchildren today, by the tens, living on Admat HaKodesh. 20 grandchildren. Some with 30 grandchildren. It's unbelievable. And others went back to America and totally lost in the American dream, which we all understand. Halavai they should remain from. That itself is a challenge. Rav Hutner came to Eretz Yisrael, a young man, and he fell in love with Eretz Yisrael. And you see, this guilt conscience that he left haunted him. As successful as he was in America, the love of Eretz Yisrael never left him. And you all know, in modern times, this is where it's at, this is where it's happening. Mr. Gruss was not wrong. Halavai, he would have been around to help the Rav back in 1935, when the Rav wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael. By the time Mr. Gruss got involved, the Rav already was not in perfect health. He had found his niche in America. Chaim was already here. But the Rav, you know, with Tover and Rabarin came in Aliyah, Dr. Tover and Rabarin Lichtenstein, the Rav was not so happy. He missed them. They're leaving America. He's only a human being. The Rebbe was amazing. He would read your mind or read your heart. Some people he would tell, stay where you are. And other people got a bracha to go to Eretz Yisrael. Who built Kfar Chabad? Who built in every Kiryat Malachi, Shikun Chabad, the Shikunei Chabad Yerushalayim? Many of them, people that the Rebbe sent. Rav Chutner could never shake it off. I want to show you, and there are many letters, but one example, Pachad Yitzchak, I'm quoting the last volume, Igrot Uktavim, the volume where he has his letters, his writings. I'm quoting on page Resh Nun Dalet, letter Kuf Samach Bet, that was written 1928, 1 year before the massacre, written in Hebron. And his Hebrew is magnificent. B'dabri al odot hafladam Eretz Yisrael. When I speak about leaving Eretz Yisrael, he was going back to Warsaw at the time, going back to Eastern Europe. You can't imagine how difficult this is for me. Ha, akama, how really difficult. Someone who was not here and did not see with his own eyes what is happening here, you will not start to understand how deeply tied midat ahikashrut a Jew becomes to Eretz Yisrael. And I have to tell you, those of you that have made Aliyah, I'm not a mystic, but I have to tell you, I feel the atmosphere here, Avira Diara, much differently than what I feel in Chutz Laretz. Maybe psychological, call it what you wish. It's my atmosphere. It's my land. When I go, all right, you all know, I cry easily. Okay, it's not a bad trait to cry easily. People who cry easily are not bad people, they're generally good people. So when I go to the fallout ceremonies, I mean, I also went through the army, but I don't want to brag. I wasn't exactly although I have a battle ribbon from 82, I have to be honest with you, but all right, I was. They're not going to turn me into an outstanding frontline Krabi soldier. But all right, I did good things and important things in the army. My children were. But my grandchildren, all right, grandchildren are your special interest in life. And I've been at so many ceremonies, and you look around the people, Amcha Yisrael, Kibbutz Goliath, every language under the sun being spoken, and the love, the camaraderie, it's not the real Israel, it's not the drivers cutting you off. And it's unbelievable. And that feeling you can only have here. You can't have it anywhere else in the world. And my children all know, they laugh at me and look at me, because when I sing the Hatikva, you know, they raise the flag at the end and sing the Hatikva. And I'm crying like a baby. But that's Israel. I understand Rav Chutner. Midat ahitkashrut. And then he says, and in addition, I owe the land so much, I have to be thankful, because what I learned here, I could not learn anywhere else. Here's where I understood what Torah is about. Deeply concentrating and comprehending what Judaism is about. It became a living reality for me. And this has tremendous influence on me. And I'll tell you in parentheses, just one quote. He mentioned Rav Teitz. So when Rav Teitz came back from Eretz Yisrael, his first visit. I heard a recording of it. It was in the early 50s, mid-50s. So Rav Teitz spoke so beautifully about the experience, and he says, in Yerushalayim, you see, men on bikes, driving bikes, and some of them kippot, tzitzits, swinging in the air, and no one looks twice, he says. You know, you could see, you can imagine in Elizabeth in the 1950s, someone was riding a bike with his tzitzit swinging in the air. They'd look at him, "Mister, your fringes are showing." There was a good Jew in Philadelphia, my first fellow, he just died, Dave Bachrach, wonderful Jew. So he's walking to shul with his talis under his coat during the winter, and a kid is running after him yelling, "Mister, mister, fringes are sticking out from underneath your coat." And you know, the kid, I don't know, was Jewish, not Jewish, he didn't know. And Dave Bachrach had a sense, he said, "How many strings are sticking out?" So the kid says, "I see about 9, 10. He says, "Yeah, that's fine, they're supposed to stick out." That's what he answered the poor kid. But what he says here, and he says, all this was only caused because the land's hashpa'ata alai, its influence on me. Shum shita, shum more, shum mechanach, mechanech, lo hayayol kol kach lahachvir al toch, tochai nishmati, kimosha staza Eretz Yisrael. Wow, that's a very strong statement. No teacher, no Rebbe. It's like these kids feed into Eretz Yisrael. All right, when I began, it was a different ballpark being TV. Everyone was older. But today you see thousands of kids coming every year after high school. Kids who ran around, laughed at Yiddishkeit, fought their rebellion. What's this all about? And you see the kid a year later. What's the expression they use? He flips out. It's a different kid altogether. And a good part of it is not the Rebbe. Well, don't give Rakefit some credits or BMT, big deal. It's that, no, it's Eretz Yisrael. It's the experience of Akmat HaKodesh. And Rav Putna's words, halavai, halavai, but here you see these kids come out of the finest day school, high schools, and they can't even read a Daf Gemara properly.
And you know, I've said that. And the whole system is bidiyah.
And you see what happens here, and you see what Futna says, that what is there is that Eretz Yisrael, Mekomam ha'amiti shel chayrei chayei Torah, Brit kruta le'eretz ule Torah. I mean, it's overwhelming. And I can tell you, when I was Menachem Avil a few weeks ago, when that family from Russia contacted me, I hadn't seen them in 30 years. And it was overwhelming. There's a picture I hope to publish in the next volume of Rakafat Aharon. It's my teaching in Leningrad. And this was a few teenagers there, in addition to older people. It's 85. And I remember I was... And they thought I'm an American. I mean, I found that out 30 years later, just 2 weeks ago. I was such a good liar that they thought I'm really from Queens. We weren't allowed to say it from Israel, but somehow many of the refuseniks picked up from our slang, our language, our Hebrew, that we're not really living in America anymore. But these people, chabotnikim, wonderful chabotnikim, really believed I'm living, coming. I was describing to them walking to the Kotel. And these were girls, 14, 15 at the time. The boy there. And they were crying, you know, and it was such a distant dream. But they could feel the Kedusha just from the way I was speaking about Eretz Yisrael. And Baruch Hashem, Zachinu B'dor Hazeh, what an ingathering of the exiles. And just think what Jomo was doing now, that I don't let him to come to class Monday. He's in Shvatami. He's learning for Chavruta with Russian kids. He teaches over the internet to Ukraine and to Siberia. Could you imagine? Russians in Russia. But it's mind-boggling what we have been privileged to. Okay? Brit Kruta Le'eretz ule Torah. Quoting the Gemara in Brachot, the Perush of Rashi, nothing stands in the way of the kedusha that you get from Eretz Yisrael. Nothing will equal it. We have a lot more to go, but time is breathing down our back. Call today's lecture "The Difficulties of Gaining a Home in Israel." Got it? You know why? Because Rabban Soloveitchik will only reach in 2 weeks from now. Okay, I have a lot more to do, but listen to me carefully. My dear students, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming. Once again, I've lost a good 50 years since yesterday afternoon. I taught yesterday too, gave a shin shas and paiskim, and the youngest person in the room. But by nightfall, many of the 50 years I lost will be back again, but Baruch Hashem will go further. I want to remind you that there's no class next Sunday. Monday, we pick up afterwards, and I hope not to miss any more classes. As far as I can see, I may have more great children on the way if my eyes are correct, but it's not going to... And look how my two great-grandsons born this semester both had the Brit on Monday. So, unbelievable. So what did we do today? We're going a little further with Rav Huttner. We dealt with the difficulty the final year. We dealt so beautifully with what Slabaku was about. Don't forget that story with the smoking on Shabbat. And we had it in BMT in the late 80s. I'll tell you the story. They had it to Yule, a kid, Russian origins, but raised in America. Sent to public school because his parents were worried stiff. Sent to yeshiva to Be'er HaGola because his parents were worried stiff that in the public school he'd get involved with drugs like the high schools in Brooklyn. And they were up in spot and they got drunk on Shabbos and the kid lit up a cigarette or something, made a fire, whatever, I think made a fire. And Rabbi Hurwitz, it was late in the year, Rabbi Hurwitz called me in, "What should we do with this kid?" I said, "Speak with him, don't throw him out, you know where he's coming from, hope for a little link will remain." And the year ended and the kid goes back to America. Many years later, I'm at a wedding, Jeff Moore, if you know Jeff Moore, Moore from Beit Shemesh, my Talmud, his wedding, send regards to him. So this kid was a classmate of Jeff. Many. Jeff got married years later. He wasn't so young when he got married. Married a wonderful girl, right? The marriage worked out very well. Kainain Hara. He's Sephardic, she's Ashkenazic, but marriage Israel, that no longer matters, thank God. So I'm at the wedding, and I see a kid sitting in the corner. I think I had the first two brachot at the wedding. I read the ketubah. I was not a Sephardic edition. It was a rub, an American rub, but I got the next kibbutz, whatever. So I see this kid sitting in the corner, he's sitting down here. I see black cat. I look at that face. I know that kid. So I signal the kid, "Come over to me." Kid walks over like who knows what he was walking to. That was the kid who made the fire in Svat on Shabbat. I cried. I said, "Why didn't you come over to me? You have no idea what nachar I have." And later, I get a call from a very prominent rabbi. He's about the kid. He wants to marry this rabbi's niece. I say, absolutely, 100%. Whenever I meet this rabbi, I ask how they're doing, never look back. Baruch Hashem. So we'll pick up exactly where we left off. I would cancel all trips to the Marlins, back to Florida, not to mix the next class when Rabban Soloveitchik will be teaching it. Now, I found this book in this building. It is, if Reb Simcha Zissel of Kelm would walk into here, the building would be closed down. It's a disgrace. You should walk into the building 6:15 in the morning when I come in, 6:20 if it is Kriyat HaTorah, the davening takes a little longer. What this building looks like. Go down where they have tea and coffee for the students. Books are strewn there. What? When? Where? I see this book. It's about Rebbetzin Kanievsky. I went through the book. I want to tell you, I told my wife, "Honey, I'm shaking. I'm a litvak." And these people have Ruach HaKodesh. You got to read this book little star. I knew that she was a very, from Chaim Kanievsky's late wife, she was a fabulous individual with such love, such outreach. And just the stories that she relates, wow.
Who's the author?
A lady who became her right hand in Beitin Challah, Ruthie, one second, I'll give you the name. Again, they don't show pictures of women, which is a shame. Here, Ruthie Atiyaz, a Svadik girl, that's a Moroccan name, Ruthie Atiyaz. And she became very close to the Rebbetzin, and she recorded stories of that.
It's a big biography.
The Rebbetzin, yeah, I know. The biography is an art scroll work, and it's very nice. It's a little different than the average. Here's her husband, and here's her husband, and here it shows they don't have her picture, which troubles me. You'll understand next week.
She would want her picture in the
You'll understand next week. And here's Hasidah. You see, it says, Shamur LeRabbanit Kanievsky. She davened three times a day in shul, in the Big Shtibble. What's it called, the Big Shtibble in Bnei Brak? Lederman's. Yeah, Hamyakum Yuchad, where she davened three times a day. And walking home, people could come to her for bracha with kach. What sitka? What we're going through, my dear students, with women rabbis, here's a letter, dear rabbis, from a yoetzet. She's anonymous. And she rips the hell out of the rabbis. What are you yelling about women rabbis? Look at the sins of rabbis. So I have to tell you.
Exactly.
Exactly. Two wrongs don't make a right. But I am positive RCA didn't issue what they issued, covering up, lo aleinu, the scandals we have. It is terrible. It's a fault in chinuch. It's a fault in our times. And I know too many religious people that religion is just klapei chutz. It doesn't mean a thing to them. Today I want to show you Shabbos, Kashrut. But the real Torah personality is lacking. But it's an interesting letter. Here's the whole story of how the resolution came to be. And I can't believe it. It's some of my students via the website are the leaders who moved the resolution. Here's the Pope who agrees with us. Women will be banned from Catholic priesthood forever. Okay? This is from, where is Yomo? This is
you want to read for Yomo?
From the New York Times. More of Kremlin's opponents are ending up dead.
Uh-oh.
So you see, that Rakefet is an idiot. He paskin b'alacha, you're only allowed to live in Russia if you live outside of Israel, because it's the only country in the Western world which observes the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach as far as sexual values. But according to that article, they're missing more. Here's a nice article on Yutet Kislev. Here's a very fascinating article on the Russian. They found from the Volozhin library a list of books that they had or purchased in 1762. It's amazing what comes up in scholarship. For anyone who reads modern Hebrew, here's an article by Rabbi Ari Schwat dealing with feminism, where he makes an interesting point that I've often felt that all this began in America because they have no worries. Kanayin Hara, you live in a nice community, you make a good living, no one is serving in the army, no one is up front. Here once again is the announcement of the book that's coming out that I will have a lot to say about by Chabad, and with some very fascinating pictures. Here is a freebie that I wish someone would take. Oh, I have such a problem here with this modern Hebrew. Gentlemen, if you don't learn modern Hebrew, you're not part of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kutna was part of Eretz Yisrael. You see, he's trying to educate me right now. Alex, Rav Kutna's Hebrew melts in your mouth like butter. It is this.
Modern Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh.
You better read.
I understand, now, but you're making a claim that...
Not to say that you better read, you better study Ari Schwartz Sefer on the Degel and the...
No.
Do me a favor. I want to hear your comment. I claim this guy doesn't know what Yiddishkeit is about. I claim he's off the wall with that you don't do anything God describes. And tell me what you feel.
Which things?
The CD. Now,
who's
finally,
the
for some of gentlemen, you read Hebrew.
No, did you?
One second. Give me a second. Did you hear last Sunday's class where I answer Yitz's question why the world doesn't adopt Reb Moshe's psak and what's happening here? Here. That's from the Shomrei Amunim family. He's a Roth. His papa's a Rebbe. They don't take money from the state. They're way beyond Agudat Yisrael and Satma. Shomrei Amunim. This is his son. Read what he has to say, why he's proud to be an Israeli. It's word by word what Rakefet said in Shir a week ago Sunday. My dear students, I want to thank you once again for coming, and till we meet again in health and happiness. And one day we're going to have a party with Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Don't say it unless you're going to do it.
My children, well, we got the sauce here, buddy. How do we get my daughter got us coffee ice cream at the factory, which we put in our freezer safe for our birthdays.
Where's the factory?
It is better than anything, makes Haagen-Dazs look second best. Okay? Where's the factory? It's not in Petrich Tikva, right?
Outside of
Kiryat Malachi. Probably has Chassidim working there. Check with your son. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. All Marlins should do well. Second to the Yankees, I'm going to root for them. Turn it off. We'll take care of that.
Deborah has something to do her.